For LibertarianChristians.com, this is Norman Horn. You're listening to the LCC Podcast. All right, welcome once again. Today is a momentous day. I am releasing the first installment of Christianity and War and Other Essays Against the Warfare State by Lawrence Vance in audiobook form. Today I'm presenting the first three parts, the foreword, the introduction, and the first essay, which gives the book its title, Christianity and War. If you want to keep up with these installments, make sure to subscribe either to the RSS feed or the email subscription, or use your podcast software and use the specially created podcast feed. Thanks for listening, and without further ado, here is Christianity and War and Other Essays Against the Warfare State by Lawrence Vance. Foreword by Mike Reith, Major, United States Air Force, retired. United States military officers undergo multiple levels of leadership and military training throughout their careers. It was only 25 years ago that I sat as a young Air Force captain and received my first exposure to the history of warfare, military leadership, the rules of modern warfare, and the Geneva Conventions. I prided myself on being one of the good guys in the world and was able to shove back beyond my conscience the obvious conflicts, such as the use of indiscriminate weaponry, collateral damage, and some of the more embarrassing moments in our history of conflict. It seemed that, regardless of our moral wrongs, we were basically a good nation and the greatest hope for the world. It was only a few years later that I began to feel the stirrings of an awareness of myself as a sinner in the hands of a just God and eventually came to faith in the finished work of Christ as my only hope for salvation. I eagerly consumed the Bible and theology, finding myself aligned with the Christian Right evangelical movement. Conveniently, I found that my theology and nationalism seemed to meld perfectly. I was proud to serve in a military that was ready to defend interventionist foreign policies. Conveniently, I found it easy to follow the advice of my father, himself a career military combat officer. It is not our job to concern ourselves with politics and Washington, D.C. We are to be about the profession of war. Dad certainly had a healthy distaste for politicians, as do many officers. Truth has an unhealthy habit of confronting lies. In my case, it came in the writings of Lawrence Vance. His writings used the wisest military tactics, on the one hand, scrambling my communications with military doctrine, and on the other, attacking my religious beliefs with a brilliant flanking maneuver. My concurrent discovery of LouRockwell.com worked together with Vance's writings to challenge my rather weak public education and strong military indoctrination. I found both my Christian faith and my understanding of the state confused and uncertain. My first reaction was anger and disbelief. Vance is nothing if not a persistent Christian. Indeed, he is running the race to win and has refused the world's attempts to silence him. Each essay unsettled my military view, my theology, and my understanding of the history of the Christian Church. I found myself running to history books, historical Christian writers, and the Bible to disprove him. Most describe it as a loss of innocence, that moment of enlightenment when we discover a painful truth of life. My loss of innocence is still ongoing. Vance has caused me to open my eyes. The result has been a discovery of the wonderful truths and economics of libertarianism, and a correction and deepening of my faith in and understanding of Christianity, and most importantly, the orthodox, historical, and biblical views of war. Growth does not come without price, nor does following the teachings of Christ. Inspired by Vance, I have set about trying to reach my Christian brethren who support war and the military due to their confusion over key passages in the Bible. To some degree, I have found myself ostracized. Yet, rather than discouraging me, it tells me that I am on the right course, for Christ himself predicted such for those who followed him in obedience. In this most commendable work, Vance greatly expands upon his previous edition. It will be my goal to get a copy into the hands of every military comrade and fellow Christian that I know well enough to reach with my concerns. Let me not suggest that the reader must be military or Christian. Indeed, this book is a perfect antidote for the poison being slowly fed through the media, our public schools and universities, conservative and fundamental Christian churches, and the military. Within its pages, the reader will surely be challenged in his prior understanding of history and the biblical view of warfare. Vance pulls no punches. I cringed at the first time I found myself being called a Christian warmonger. As I have said, growth can be painful. I will be forever indebted to Vance for his clear understanding of history, Christianity, and libertarian thought. I challenge the reader to not simply accept what he writes, but to test what he writes by holding it against the pale of Orthodox Christianity, the Bible, and history itself. This book is a clarion call that challenges the modern American church, the military member, and all citizens as to their beliefs concerning the historical and moral aspects of warfare. For me, it was literally life-changing. Mike Reith. Introduction. These essays, although organized under 7 headings, have one underlying theme: opposition to the warfare state that robs us of our liberty, our money, and in some cases, our life. Conservatives who decry the welfare state while supporting the warfare state are terribly inconsistent. The two are inseparable. Libertarians who are opposed to war on principle, but support the state's bogus war on terrorism, even as they remain silent about the U.S. global empire, are likewise contradictory. Christians who condone the warfare state and its nebulous crusades against evil have been duped. There is nothing Christian about the state's aggressive militarism, its senseless wars, its interventions into the affairs of other countries, and its expanding empire. These 79 essays also have one thing in common. They were all published on the premier anti-state, anti-war, pro-market website, lewrockwell.com, during the period from October 29, 2003 to November 19, 2007. The vast majority of them were written exclusively for that website and have never appeared in print until now. LewRockwell.com is the brainchild of Lew Rockwell, the founder and president of the Ludwig von Mises Institute in Auburn, Alabama, and a leading opponent of the central state, its wars, and its socialism. Each essay is reprinted verbatim, with the exception of the correction of a few minor errors. It should be noted, however, that the original spelling, capitalization, and punctuation are followed in all quotations. Because they were published on the Internet, most of the essays originally contained numerous links to documentation and further information on the web that the reader could click on if he desired. Because this feature is not possible in a printed format, the reader is encouraged to consult the online versions of each essay at lewrockwell.com, where, thanks to the wonders of technology, they are archived. Many of the essays also originally included pictures, which, for space considerations, are not included here. Although many of these essays reference contemporary events, the principles discussed in all of them are timeless. War, militarism, empire, interventionism, the warfare state, and the Christian attitude towards these things. The essays in each chapter are listed in their order of publication, with the exception of the essays on the U.S. global empire in Chapter 7, which are better read chronologically. The essays can be read in any order. The first chapter of the book, Christianity and War, and especially the initial essay of the same name, which also furnishes the book with its title, should be regarded as the key portion of the book. War is a subject that needlessly divides and sidetracks Christians. It is the author's contention that Christian enthusiasm for the state, its wars, and its politicians is an affront to the Savior, contrary to Scripture, and a demonstration of the profound ignorance many Christians have of history. In Chapter 2, War and Peace, the evils of war and warmongers and the benefits of peace are examined. In Chapter 3, The Military, the evils of standing armies and militarism are discussed, including a critical look at the U.S. military. In Chapter 4, Christianity and the Military, the idea that Christians should have anything to do with the military is shown to be illogical, immoral, and unscriptural. In Chapter 5, The War in Iraq, the folly of U.S. policy in Iraq is laid bare. In Chapter 6, Other Wars, the evils of war and the warfare state are chronicled in specific wars: the Crimean War, 1854 to 1856, the Russo-Japanese War, 1904 to 1905, World War I, 1914 to 1918, and World War II, 1939 to 1945. In Chapter 7, The U.S. Global Empire, the beginnings, growth, extent, nature, and consequences of the U.S. empire of bases and troops are revealed and critiqued. The books listed at the close under For Further Reading include not only some of the more important books referenced in the essays, but other recommended works that relate in some way to the warfare state. Most of them are available from Amazon.com. The inclusion of any book should not be taken as a blanket endorsement of everything contained in the book or anything else written by the author. It is my desire in all of these essays to show, as Randolph Bourne said many years ago, that war is the health of the state. Chapter 1. Christianity and War. We will export death and violence to the four corners of the earth in defense of our great nation, the Bush administration. From whence come wars and fightings among you? Come they not hence, even of your lusts that war in your members? James chapter 4, verse 1. War is the health of the state. Randolph Bourne. War is a racket. It always has been. It is possibly the oldest, easily the most profitable, surely the most vicious. It is the only one international in scope. It is the only one in which the profits are reckoned in dollars and the losses in lives. U.S. Marine Corps Major General Smedley Butler. War prosperity is like the prosperity that an earthquake or a plague brings. The earthquake means good business for construction workers, and cholera improves the business of physicians, pharmacists, and undertakers, but no one has for that reason yet sought to celebrate earthquakes and cholera as stimulators of the productive forces in the general interest. Ludwig von Mises. War is God's judgment on sin here. Hell is God's judgment on sin hereafter. Bob Jones, Sr. I saw in the whole Christian world a license of fighting at which even barbarous nations might blush. Wars were begun on trifling pretexts or none at all, and carried on without any reference of law, divine or human. Hugo Grotius. Our wars, for the most part, proceed either from ambition, from anger and malice, from the mere wantonness of unbridled power, or from some other mental distemper. Desiderius Erasmus. That the ongoing undeclared war in Iraq is supported by apologists for what World War II General and later President Dwight Eisenhower called the military-industrial complex is no surprise. What is surprising, however, is the present degree of Christian enthusiasm for war. Our Christian forefathers thought differently, as will presently be seen. Just war theory, although it has been misused by political leaders to encourage soldiers to needlessly fight, kill, bleed, and die with the full support of the civilian populace, including many of its Christians, is nevertheless still relevant in this age of tanks, bombs, landmines, and weapons of mass destruction. In his 1625 treatise, De Jure Belli Ac Pacis, on the Law of War and Peace, the famed Dutch Christian Hugo Grotius, universally recognized as the father of international law, set forth six jus ad bellum just recourse to war conditions that limit a nation's legitimate recourse to war. Just cause, correct intention, self-defense with an objective. Proportionality, grave enough situation to warrant war. Reasonable chance for success, obtainable objectives. Public declaration, fair warning, opportunity for avoidance. Declaration only by legitimate authority. And last resort, all other options eliminated. Or, as the historian and economist Murray Rothbard said, in making his case that America has only had two just wars, 1776 and 1861, a just war exists when a people tries to ward off the threat of coercive domination by another people, or to overthrow an already existing domination. A war is unjust, on the other hand, when a people try to impose domination on another people, or try to retain an already existing coercive rule over them. Grotius also articulated three jus in bello, justice in the course of war, conditions that govern just and fair conduct in war, legitimate targets, only combatants, not civilians, proportionality, means may not exceed what is warranted by the cause, and treatment of prisoners, combatants are through capture rendered non-combatants. Grotius' fellow Dutchman, Desiderius Erasmus, was certainly no pacifist, yet he lamented, "War would be understandable among the beasts, for they lack natural reason. It is an aberration among men, because the evil of war can be easily understood through the use of reason alone. War, however, is inconceivable among Christians, because it is not only rationally objectionable, but, even more important, ethically inadmissible." The fact that a government claims a war is just is irrelevant, for American history is replete with examples of American presidents who have exaggerated, misinformed, misrepresented, and lied to deceive the American people into supporting wars that they would not have supported if they had known the facts. In 1846, President James Polk, after Texas' accession to the Union, deliberately put U.S. troops into an area still complicated by the existence of a boundary dispute with Mexico, so as to be able to go to Congress with an incident and get a declaration of war. In 1861, President Abraham Lincoln waged war on his own people after declaring in his first inaugural address, "I have no purpose, directly or indirectly, to interfere with the institution of slavery in the states where it exists. I believe I have no lawful right to do so, and I have no inclination to do so." In 1898, President William McKinley began a splendid little war with Spain over Cuba, its sequel to secure U.S. colonial power in the Philippines, left dead 4,000 U.S. troops, more than 20,000 Filipino fighters, and more than 220,000 Filipino civilians, all based on the news media slogan, "Remember the Maine." In 1916, President Woodrow Wilson sought re-election on the slogan, "He kept us out of war," but then proceeded, soon after his second inauguration, to ask Congress for a declaration of war, a war to end all wars, to make the world safe for democracy. In 1940, President Franklin Roosevelt campaigned for his third term, saying, "I have said this before, but I shall say it again and again. Your boys are not going to be sent into any foreign wars." It was not long, however, before our boys were back once again on European soil. In 1964, President Lyndon Johnson announced to a crowd at Akron University, "We are not about to send American boys 9 or 10,000 miles away from home to do what Asian boys ought to be doing for themselves." This was followed by the 1964 Gulf of Tonkin Resolution that saw over 500,000 American boys fight an Asian boys' war. Over 50,000 of them came home in body bags. In 1991, President George Bush I used fake satellite photos to gain Saudi participation in the first Gulf War and to convince the American people that Hussein must be stopped from conquering the whole region. In 2003, President George Bush II insisted on the need to end a brutal regime whose aggression and weapons of mass destruction make it a unique threat to the world. The holes in this statement have been unfolding before our eyes. Yet, the gullible Christian theologian Lorraine Bettner, in his book The Christian Attitude Toward War, claims that the United States has never had a militarist president. He even advocates that the government should be given the benefit of the doubt when it comes to waging war. But contrary to Bettner, and as mentioned previously, our Christian forefathers, being much better read and having a much better grasp of history than the modern Christian who spends all his time in front of the internet and the television, have no enthusiasm for war at all. Back before the Civil War, when the Christians published theological journals worth reading, two Baptist ministers writing in the Christian Review demonstrated that Christian war fever was contrary to the New Testament. Veritatis Amans, in his 1847 article, "Can War, Under Any Circumstances, Be Justified on the Principles of the Christian Religion?" approached the subject from the standpoint of war being justified only in cases of self-defense. Another Baptist preacher, in an unsigned article from 1838 titled "Wickedness of War," approached the subject from the standpoint of the nature of war in general. Both articles look to the New Testament as their authority. Amans begins, "War has ever been the scourge of the human race. The history of the past is little else than a chronicle of deadly feuds, irreconcilable hate, and exterminating warfare. The extension of empire, the love of glory, the thirst for fame, have been more fatal to men than famine or pestilence, or the fiercest elements of nature. And what is more sad and painful, many of the wars whose desolating surges have deluged the earth have been carried on in the name and under the sanction of those who profess the name of Christ. It has not been till recently that the disciples of Christ have been conscious of the enormous wickedness of war as it usually exists. And even now there are many who do not frown upon it with that disapprobation and abhorrence which an evil of such magnitude as an unjust war deserves. Wars of every kind may be included under two classes, offensive and defensive. Concerning the former, we shall say nothing. We need not delay a moment to discuss a question so directly at variance with the dictates of conscience and the principles of revealed religion. But under what circumstances is war truly defensive? We reply, when its object is to repel an invasion, when there is no alternative but to submit to bondage and death, or to resist." The anonymous Baptist preacher, writing in an 1838 issue of the Christian Review, continues, "The war spirit is so wrought into the texture of governments and the habits of national thinking, and even into our very festivals and pomps, that its occasional recurrence is deemed a matter of unavoidable necessity. War contradicts the genius and intention of Christianity, sets at naught the example of Jesus, and is inconsistent not only with the general structure and nature of Christianity and the example of Jesus, but it violates all the express precepts of the New Testament. Christianity requires us to seek to amend the condition of man, but war cannot do this. The world is no better for all the wars of 5,000 years. Christianity, if it prevailed, would make the earth a paradise. War, where it prevails, makes it a slaughterhouse, a den of thieves, a brothel, a hell. Christianity cancels the laws of retaliation. War is based upon that very principle. Christianity is the remedy for all human woes. War produces every woe known to man. The causes of war, as well as war itself, are contrary to the gospel. It originates in the worst passions and the worst aims. We may always trace it to the thirst of revenge, the acquisition of territory, the monopoly of commerce, the quarrels of kings, the intrigues of ministers, the coercion of religious opinion, the acquisition of disputed crowns, or some other source, equally culpable. But never has any war devised by man been founded on holy tempers and Christian principles. It should be remembered that in no case, even under the Old Testament, was war appointed to decide doubtful questions or to settle quarrels, but to inflict national punishment. They were intended, as our pestilence and famine, to chastise nations guilty of provoking God. Such is never the pretext of modern war, and if it were, it would require divine authority which, as has just been said, would induce even members of the Peace Society to fight. The criminality of war, as Howard Malcolm, president of Georgetown College, wrote in 1845, is not that tyrants should lead men into wars of pride and conquest, but that the people, in governments comparatively free, should so readily lend themselves to a business in which they bear all the sufferings, can gain nothing, and may lose all. That people would act this way, Malcolm says, is an astonishment indeed. But, he continues, the chief wonder is that Christians, followers of the Prince of Peace, should have concurred in this mad idolatry of strife, and thus been inconsistent not only with themselves, but with the very genius of their system. The founding fathers of this country, many of whom were deists, had more sense than many 21st century Christians when it came to espousing a policy of peace through non-intervention. In other words, not being a busybody in other men's matters, 1 Peter 4:15. George Washington, the great rule of conduct for us in regard to foreign nations is, in extending our commercial relations, to have with them as little political connection as possible. Thomas Jefferson, peace, commerce, and honest friendship with all nations, entangling alliances with none. John Quincy Adams, America goes not abroad seeking monsters to destroy. So the war on terrorism, like the war on poverty and the war on drugs, is in so many ways just a tragic joke. But why Christians support any of these bogus wars is an even greater tragedy.